Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well in this freezing cold week. It really has been cold, but we've had some sunshine and I'm so unbelievably grateful for that. If you are two and a bit weeks into dry January, or is it kind of 3 weeks now, then well done. Don't forget our book is still available to download, Sobriety Rocks Top Tips for a Successful Dry January, which is a collection of insights and tips from myself and sober coaches that I've trained. There's lots of great stuff in there and it's free to download. So make sure you grab a copy of that. And thanks to the coaches who shared some of their audio tips over the last couple of weeks as well. Depending on when you're listening to this, a reminder straight up that this weekend is the after party event in Manchester. So Anthony Hutton, who I spoke to last week, is going to be speaking there. I'm going to be there too. Andy Blackman has organised it all, and it's at Love From in Manchester on Sunday 21st. So we're looking forward to meeting some of you and seeing you there. It's going to be great fun. I absolutely love going up to that part of the UK. What else did I want to share with you? There's been a lot in the press, hasn't there? I mean, a lot around, there always is, around Dry January, of course. And there's been some good pieces. And if Andy was featured in The Mirror, which is very cool. I get ever so excited when coaches that I've trained get mainstream coverage. It's really good. Anyway, so there's been a lot of stuff around Dry January in the press, but I'm sure it won't have escaped your notice that there's been lots of articles this week around the cost of alcohol-free drinks and how overpriced many alcohol-free drinks are. You know, there's been a whole thing about, in fact, the headlines are just absolutely talk about, you know, trying to grab the angles. It's just been crazy, you know, cheap headlines around driving people back to drink, and you know, that people are going, who decided they were going to quit, have now decided they're not because of the price of a mocktail or whatever the headlines say. But you know, it's nonsense. I mean, I know it makes a good headline, and actually it's true that quite a lot of alcohol-free drinks, they are priced highly. Some of them, understandably so, because I think, you know, some of the brands that I've interviewed over the last however many years on the podcast, they've got a really interesting story to tell, and they're sourcing really high quality ingredients and using them sometimes in a completely new way, or they're using different distilling methods that are not typically used in, you know, when you're making an alcoholic drink. So sometimes there's every good reason for that high price. Sometimes there isn't, you know, sometimes it really is just one of the companies who make alcohol, removing the alcohol from their bottles and charging the same price or more. But either way around, I just do not buy that nonsense, because there is a different value in alcohol-free drinks, right? A completely different value. Of course I can get a massive bottle of cider for 50p or whatever the hell, but do I want that? No, I most certainly do not. You know, I wouldn't have any of that stuff, however cheap it was, or free. So I think, you know, it's nonsense, all of this. It's absolute nonsense. And I think that, you know, what we should be focusing on is not trying to have a pop at people who are creating alcohol-free drinks, especially not the artisan brands, for God's sake. You know, they work really hard. I think they deserve absolutely everything. What we should be focusing on is getting the catering in the UK, you know, the hospitality in the UK. That's where there needs to be just massive change still. You still go to functions or big hotels and they have got zero options for people who are choosing not to drink. It's crazy. You know, they're still serving the warm orange juice and or they might, if they strain themselves, make you an elderflower cordial, for God's sake, and then charge you £18.50, you know, even though you've paid for your three course meal. So, you know, that's the stuff that still annoys me. But all these kind of cheap headlines about, oh, the price of alcohol-free drinks is driving us back to booze. Absolute BS. So I'd share my view on that. While we're talking about gigs, I just mentioned the one on Sunday. Just firing ahead to February, there's a Family Constellations Day in York. I know that you probably don't live in York, many of you, but come anyway. It's the most beautiful city. I love York. And come anyway. The venue is right in the centre of the town, of the city. And so you can just come for the day and just experience Family Constellations. It's life-changing. It's literally life-changing. And I find it very hard to describe, but there's a fair bit of stuff on my site. So go and have a little look. Just check out thesoberclub.com, type in Family Constellations, and you'll find some of the blog posts there. And come and join us if you can. Spaces are limited. I will do another one in Hertfordshire, but that'll be a little bit later on, in end of March, April, something like that. I'm also planning a retreat, so that's exciting. I'll be able to tell you news of that very soon. This week's Alcohol Free Life podcast guest is one of my sober coaches. It's just super exciting when I get to work with people who then go on to do just absolutely amazing things themselves, and it's just wonderful when you get to see what can come from this. And of course, there's so many different ways that people incorporate, you know, the training into their life, but I thought you'd quite like to hear this story, because for me this is a story of just bravery, really. Just and I love the fact that being sober makes you brave. So enjoy the interview. My guest is Lindsay Henneke, who ditched alcohol in August 2020 after a decade of daily drinking. We're going to get into that. The other thing that Lindsay has done has completely, or is about to completely, change her life, all due to sobriety. And Lindsay also trained with me as a sober coach. We'll talk a bit more about that later. But Lindsay, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's really great to chat to you. So you were one of the people who came and did the sober coach training. Well, rather, you did it virtually because you couldn't make it over from the States, which is a real shame. So you're going to have to come over at some point and see us.
I know. I definitely noticed the difference between the couple of us in the US who took it versus the folks in the UK, because they have a different connection than we do.
Our kind of 2 days are very transformative, but we included you guys, and it's lovely to have you with us now. And you're in Vermont, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah. And as is another one of our coaches, which was so bizarre because you actually met because you were both doing my training course.
Oh my gosh. Yes, Krista. We are such good friends now.
And it's so bizarre. I am literally responsible, she says. I need a paper hat for connecting you.
You absolutely do. We were fast friends.
It's so funny, isn't it? Amazing. Anyways, let's get into a little bit of your story, and we'll get to the pièce de résistance in a bit. But take us right back then to you know, what kind of life you were living before you stopped drinking. Because am I right in thinking you had quite a full on, fairly corporate job? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. So I've always held a corporate job, and I was really like doing well, I would say. You know, every year, every 2 years, I got a nice raise. I moved up a little with promotions. And then all of a sudden, like in my around age 37, 38, I was just completely stalled. I wasn't seeing the big raises any longer. I wasn't getting the promotions. I had been in the same role. I was, you know, the head of marketing at a credit union. But I just wasn't like elevating the way that I had been. And I definitely was going home every evening and drinking, right? And just didn't, it was like I was losing a little more confidence in myself every single day. And then I started to notice also, I was married, my husband, we had only been married a few years, and we had a friendship as well. Like we're very tight. But I noticed that over time, I would rather come home from work and not engage with my husband, but just sort of like lounge on the couch and drink and just kind of wait until it was time to go to bed and go to work the next day, only to feel like a failure again.
And so, was your husband drinking as well?
Yeah, he drinks, but it was never like me.
He had an off switch.
Yeah,
so many exactly. of our husbands have had an off switch.
Oh my gosh, my husband can come home from work and have a beer and that's it. And I'm just like, I don't get you.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Carry on.
No, that's okay. It's definitely part of the story, right? Because even now, I will say, I think he has non-alcoholic beers more, but that's also a product of the fact that there are better ones on the market now than there used to be. Yeah. But that was definitely part of the story. I just was in this cycle and I would watch him and not understand why he wasn't, you know, as intoxicated as I was, or how come you don't want to have another one, or, you know, like, so I just, it became very lonely and isolating. So that was really what got me to the point of like looking up and being like, I'm actually the only one in this marriage who's drinking like this. And I thought that because I was mostly just drinking at home alone, that it was like, fine, nobody knew on the outside that that's what I was doing. And I got to this point of like, what do people do after work if they're not drinking? Like, I had no idea what a life that involved that wasn't coming home after work and having several drinks.
Can I just ask, what, you know, sort of before it ramped up then, in inverted commas, were you drinking when you were much younger, or is it really just one of those things that sort of rolled into a habit for you rather than any big drinking, you know, when you were younger or university or whatever, if you did those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely in college, I was like the party girl. I was always very social. And I think what happened is I always assumed that if I had kids, like, oh, well, I can do whatever I want now. I don't have kids. I don't have anything to worry about. And then I went through all of these struggles with fertility and I never had kids. So I never had like this sort of stop where I had to stop drinking for 9 months like I never had that. And so the next thing I knew, I was in my 30s and I was drinking every day, basically.
Right.
So yeah, it was like a gradual progression into that everyday drinking. And it was probably my mid 30s where I really started to be worried about it. And I was worried about it for, I would say, 3 to 5 years of like, I know I can't go on like this.
And presumably, like me, you at that point, you weren't really aware that grey area drinking, you know, was a thing. People that were drinking more than they want to, but not clinically dependent. Presumably, like me, you didn't know anybody else, or because nobody spoke about it, you didn't know anybody else who was going through the same thing. It was a case of people seemed completely fine with their drinking way too much, or they were, you know, clearly alcohol dependent, needed rehab or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually didn't even learn the words gray area drinking until about 8 or 9 months ago.
Oh, right. When you started looking into my stuff. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I guess as well. I mean, I think I've had this conversation with other people from the US, but I think in the States, certainly up until relatively recently, you guys are much more okay, in inverted commas, with the word alcoholic than we are. Is that fair to say or not?
I think that probably is fair. I mean, AA is like the presumably what many people think is the only option.
Yes.
And so, and I mean, I went to one AA meeting in probably 2012 or 2013, and I was like, I am never coming back here. There is no way that I am, like, I just can't. And because it felt so labeling. And I completely understand that AA helps a lot of people, and I'm happy for that. But I just knew right away it wasn't for me.
So again, it's this chasm, isn't it, between what we assume, you know, that okay, so there are people who are, in inverted commas, alcoholics, and seemingly AA is the only option, although of course there are many other, you know, groups as well, certainly in the UK. But then we know about those people, in inverted commas, and yet we don't fit that brief. I mean, we really don't fit that brief. You had your corporate career, you were really successful, nobody would have known on the outside, in inverted commas, would they?
No. I mean, maybe, yeah, it's like a secret life. It's a
Yeah,
secret life.
it really is. I mean, it really is. But the more I talk, the more I kind of talk about this, the more I realize it really is the key, isn't it? That's why I just think it's just so important that there's so many more of us raising awareness of, you don't have to wait till you hit rock bottom. You don't have to wait till you become one of those people who are clinically dependent. You know, you
Yeah.
can absolutely make this choice and get off the booze elevator, right?
The booze elevator,
Yeah,
yes.
exactly. Which only goes, one way, back down until you step off. I'm guessing then that as you say, you went to one AA meeting. That definitely wasn't for you. And then I'm guessing, probably like me as well, you had a few rounds of giving it a go, stopping for a bit, trying moderation, all of that.
Oh yeah, I mean, after that AA meeting, it was another like 7 years before
Oh,
I got
really?
back again. I just was living my best life, so I thought, until it wasn't anymore. And then yeah, so in 2018, that's when I read my first quit lit book. And a coworker of mine and I, we were sort of each other's tribe. You know, we worked out. We always were checking in on workouts and, hey, what are you eating this week? Like, my workouts and my nutrition were 90% top notch, right? And then it was my dirty little secret that I had at home. And her and she too would be, oh, I had a few glasses of wine. I might skip the gym today. And so we would sort of commiserate on that level together. And she had mentioned this book to me, and it was Rebecca Weller, A Happier Hour. And so I read it in a weekend. It was Thanksgiving in the US, so November of 2018. And I thought, oh, I'm gonna do this. She's just like me. And so I decided to commit for 30 days and see where I went. And I failed epically. So the month of December, right? And I always talk about this is like, don't wait. But I was my 40th birthday was Christmas Eve. And so I made it to like day 28 or something. And I was with my family and I was just like, meh. And then, but that was the beginning of me really taking it seriously and being like, I need to start doing something. And so,
And did so, sorry, carry on, carry
yeah,
on.
go ahead.
No,
Oh.
I was just thinking aloud when you were going through that time of not drinking for a month or whatever it was. How did that impact in your with your work colleagues? Were you in a kind of workplace where drinking was part of that culture as well?
I wasn't, but the coworker who referred the book to me, we both decided to do the 30 days. Like we both read the book at the same time, and then we were on this little break. And I remember having so many good conversations about, oh, I went out to dinner and I just notice how much other people are drinking when they're out to dinner when I'm not drinking. And so it just elevated some observations that maybe weren't there anymore. And then, we both ended up not finishing our 30 days and then kind of going back to our norm, which I think where you were going is, yeah, it leads to this, okay, now I'm going to create rules around my drinking. I'm going to try to moderate. I felt so great that I know that now I should be able to just have a few drinks and then move on with my life because I know I don't want to feel like crap anymore. And, but that didn't happen. That did not happen. I went right back to drinking too much.
It's so common, isn't it? It's so common. We all of us have been round this block and got to the point where, oh well, I'm good now. I can moderate. I can just have one. And really, the key is when we finally get that light bulb that allows us to say, but yes, I could just have one. Of course, I could. But why the hell would I want to do that? It's not about
Yes.
whether it's one or whether it leads to more. It's why would I want to do that? Why would I want to self-harm even with one drink? Like, why do that when life is so much better without? That's it,
I
isn't it? That's the
know.
key. And it takes us a few times. I mean, so many there'll be people listening to this who are kind of in that early stages of beating themselves up, like, oh, why can't I do this? And it will come. And I believe that. For many people, it can come a lot quicker than it did for me, and probably for you.
Oh my gosh.
Because of these stories, right? Because we can share how much better life is without, then there isn't so much of this hankering for life with it.
I know. It's so true. I mean, it was 20 months of stopping and starting and stopping and starting. And I woke up in June of 2020, I was like, I have to do something different.
So that would have been lockdown in the UK.
It was lockdown here too.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yep. And I had definitely been drinking more. And I had mentioned earlier that I'd had fertility issues. And so I had recently learned that I needed to have a hysterectomy.
Wow.
And I was afraid. So only like three people know this. I've only told a handful of people this.
Well, you've told a few thousand now.
Yeah. I was actually afraid that if I had continued drinking at the level that I was, and obviously I had been lying to my doctor, that I would have alcohol withdrawal symptoms like while under anesthesia. Like I was worried that my alcohol intake would affect the anesthesia and that my surgery would be complicated.
Right.
And so I decided when I learned what my surgery date was going to be, which was kind of all over the place because of lockdown and COVID, it was like, there was no elective surgery. So unless it was emergent, you know? So anyway, when I learned what my surgery date was, I told myself 2 weeks before that date, I'm stopping drinking. Mm. And that was it. I probably drank more than I ever had the weekend leading up to that date. And, but I stopped. And then I knew, of course, after my surgery that I was going to be on probably some sort of painkillers and I was going to have rest time. So I figured there was also a couple of weeks there where I wouldn't have been drinking anyway. Yeah. And then I just knew it. I knew that this was an opportunity to feel my best. And if I went back, I was never going to have the life I wanted.
I think it's so important, you know, the point that you raise there about, you know, it took that kind of crisis almost, really, didn't it, to kind of act as a motivator for you, you know, and once you really had that motivation in place, you know, I mean, of course, it's a shame that it had to be a health issue like that, but
sure.
but that gave you that motivation that you needed. And it's such an important point, because if anyone who's having any kind of procedure or operation, why would you not want to be in the best health? And, you know, now you mention it, I don't think that, certainly in the UK, I don't think the medical profession make us aware of this, make us aware of the importance of getting ourselves in as optimum health as we can before we have procedures. But of course it makes sense, doesn't it? Not to mention the recovery is going to be so much quicker if we're all things being equal, not poisoning ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's to be in your best health is only going to help you recover to your point sooner. And so there was definitely a little fear that was part of my motivation.
of course.
And I also just knew, I mean, I had recently started a new job and I worked really hard to get it. And I had gotten a huge raise along with this job. And I just knew that if I was going to be successful there, I needed to make a big change. And I did. And almost within a year or 18 months, I increased my income 35%, you know, I was back at it. I was killing it back at my job. And now it's all about having more confidence, you know, like when I was drinking and coming home every night and kind of feeling sorry for myself and like, why am I not getting ahead? I was never getting ahead. But when I had this clear mind and this motivation and my drive was back to succeed, it was all happening very naturally for me. It was almost not work. It was just my old self was back.
I guess it's a new version of you as well, isn't it? That you actually start to like yourself again.
Yeah. And I'm feeling, and it's like that confidence, like I know that I know when I'm right, I know when I'm wrong, and I'm not afraid to talk about either one of those scenarios, right? And when we're able to talk about when we're wrong, that means you're confident.
Yeah.
And so.
And I know you felt that it helped you to reconnect, you know, that your relationship with your husband got better too.
Absolutely. There was never a moment where my husband was like, you need to quit drinking because it's ruining our marriage. Like, that never happened. But I definitely felt that disconnection happening and all on my side because of me. And so as my mind was clear, I would actually remember conversations that we had, and we were just able to start connecting on a deeper level. And I think that there was an added level of respect for me as well. And there was maybe after 6 or 8 months, I remember him saying, people don't do what you did by themselves. And because I didn't seek a sober community, I just had him and my Quitlet. Like, that was it.
So when you quit and the first sort of few weeks or whatever, what were the hardest bits for you? Did you, you know, was there anything around other relationships apart from your relationship with your husband? I've just been thinking quite a lot recently about how interesting it is that some friends and kind of acquaintances sort of stay with you, and they may stop drinking, they may not stop drinking, but they support you, they stay in your life, and others just don't. And what's interesting is you don't usually have to do anything massive to kind of shoo them away or anything. It just naturally dissipates. Did that happen for you?
I don't think that I have lost any of my closest friends. I think that we still all spend a lot of time together. I'm very comfortable being around people who drink. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, I wasn't as so, but now I really feel comfortable with it. And I have noticed that also other friends of ours, like, I don't think that they drink as much. And I'm not saying at all that that's because of me. I think it's just, we're all on our own journey, right? And I don't know. I feel really comfortable with it. I have some friends that, you know, we would go on yoga retreats for weekends. And then that Sunday night when I'd get home, I'd be drinking a bottle of wine. And so now those types of weekends are a lot more meaningful because I'm not worried about getting home on Sunday afternoon to drink before I have to start a work week. And I think that we've been able to create different memories together than the ones that previously were fueled with day drinking and parties.
Yeah, totally. So tell us about your decision to come and do the or to virtually do the coach training.
I had no insight into this like massive sobriety culture on social media until about May. I kind of started to share my story a little more. And that's when I realized, like, this is a huge community. This is beautiful. And then I found you and I was just thrilled with your, I started listening to your podcast and I was so excited about you. And I thought, I really want to help other women now that I'm realizing how many there are out there. And whether that's just sharing a few reels on social media so that people know that they're not alone, or going all in and taking your sober coach training. I knew that there's an element that I needed to share this. And women do not need to go to work and feel like they're stalling out. And they can make a change. And for me, that was ditching alcohol. It completely changed my life for the better. I never, ever miss it. And I never feel like I wish that I could still have it. Like, I just don't.
Isn't that the best? I was saying that to someone the other day, that if you'd have said to me, you know, 6 years ago, you won't desire a drink, I just never would have believed you. I could have kind of vaguely imagined that I might be able to have enough willpower not to drink, but I could never have imagined that I would have no desire whatsoever. If you paid me, you know, 3 million quid cash right now, no thank you, I am not going back there.
for anything.
Yeah. Like, why would I any more than I would accept heroin? No, thanks.
Exactly. I know. Even to the point where sometimes when I'm out and I order like a mocktail, there's always a mini panic inside me at first that there's like alcohol
in case they've put something in it. Yeah.
And sorry. And so that's always something that worries me, but you know, there isn't. That's never happened to me.
I did once accidentally cop a taste of a glass of somebody else's glass of wine by accident. Oh my God. I couldn't spit it out quick enough. It tasted like petrol. Literally tasted like petrol. What the hell was I thinking of downing a bottle of that every night? I mean, one little sip and it burnt me, and it was literally vile. And I just thought, my God, who is actually putting this stuff in their body? Oh, I remember, that was me.
That was me.
Oh my God.
It's so funny because if I think back to the first time I ever had a glass of wine, I remember being like, this is the most disgusting thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. Most children do not drink wine, do they? Or even teenagers don't like it. You know, I mean, this is the thing, is it's just so ridiculous that people talk about how they like the taste of alcohol. No, they don't like the taste of alcohol. The alcohol is literally just toxic. And then it's been covered up with a load of other crap or sugar or whatever. And they perhaps get used to the taste of that. But no one likes the taste of alcohol, right?
Yeah, that's it. It's they get used to it. And we were right there with them, right?
Like, yeah, totally. Totally. So tell us a little bit about what happened for you then, because what's so cool about your story is that, you know, I mean, I often talk about how people, once they've stopped drinking, they suddenly think they have a confidence and didn't know they have a clarity, they have a bravery, because being sober makes you brave. And then they go after what it is they want. And for you, it was a case of, well, here's what I don't want to do my job anymore, right?
yeah, absolutely. I think I just, now that I know what freedom looks like and feels like, I have so much more confidence. Like, I just know that I'm capable of anything now. Where before, when I was stalling in my career, I felt like I wasn't capable. And so I did decide to leave my job. I am leaving my job. And I mean, I have a wonderful job. I work with amazing people. But I just know that I can be effective doing something different. And I don't have to go into an office anymore and prove myself when I could be helping other people in more meaningful ways to me. Not what I'm doing now isn't meaningful for the people that I work with. I mean, I like to think it is. I love them and I really enjoy working with them. But I just know that now I can just do what I want. And
well, it's your time to do something different, isn't it? And I think, you know, I've had a similar conversation with quite a few clients, actually, who've kind of said, you know, they've outlined that there are so many things, because once you get sober, you are able to look at what's going, rather than just being on that goddamn kind of hamster wheel where everything, you know, that there's so many aspects of your life aren't working and aren't right. And yet, if you're anything like me, you just keep putting it off. Like, oh, well, I'll look at that problem, you know, when the kids leave home. Oh, I'll look at that. You know, I'll do that after the holiday, and I'll look at that when I retire. And we just put everything off because, quite honestly, everything just feels overwhelming. And it's so much easier just to reach for a drink and just put it off to another day. But once we stop drinking, it frees up time, doesn't it? It frees up, as you say, the confidence, the bravery. It helps us see with clarity, well, what do I really want? What is actually going to be right for me? And then from that place, we can make some, you know, brave decisions. And it is a brave decision, isn't it, to quit your job? I mean, I've had similar conversations with a lot of people who they don't feel able to do it. And by the way, this conversation isn't saying that everyone should quit their job. Not at all.
Don't do that.
Don't give up your day job. Don't try this at home. You know, I mean, everything, of course, everything has to be in place. But I think that, you know, what's can be exciting for people is when they, you know, quite a few of the people who've trained as sober coaches, they are working. They do have jobs, sometimes full time, sometimes part time, but they know they want to gather extra skills, extra resources. They want stuff under utilize as and when they want to utilize it. And mm-hmm. and suddenly there's space freed up to be able to do that. And that's really the exciting part, isn't it? Is in order for you to make that decision, which for you was huge, you mm-hmm. obviously really had to listen to your gut, because I'm guessing that when you make that decision, not only do you lose your, you know, your big pay packet or whatever that you worked hard to build up to, but all the other benefits that come with having a as I call it, real job.
Yes.
I've never had a real job, so I don't even know what one is, but I'm guessing you get holiday pay and all that kind of jazz.
Oh man, not only holiday pay, but Janie, in the US, many of us are reliant on our employers for our health insurance.
Ah, yeah, so, because it's very expensive in the, yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Right. And so, I mean, unfortunately, I'll go on to my husband's health insurance, but we'll have to pay extra for it, where now we both get health insurance through our employers for free. Mm. So that was one of the major pieces of my decision. And then of course, okay, how much money am I willing to not save? How long of a time period, and how much money out of my savings am I willing to take?
Yeah.
So yeah, there was definitely a lot of planning that took place to prepare for it. But eventually enough is enough of the planning. Like, you just have to do it, because
well, good
you
for you. And as you
forever.
Say, it just feels right for you. And you know what? What have you got to lose if it doesn't work? I'm sure somebody else will employ you. you know, sometimes we just have to, I think this is what sobriety does, I think, for so many people. It allows you to just take the pressure off yourself. And when something feels really important, there's that sense of, well, okay, so if it doesn't work out, I'll do something else. You know, it allows us to be more, feel more flexible, I think, and open to possibility.
Yes, exactly. Actually, it's so funny you say that. A woman that works for me, we were talking about me leaving, as I had to share it with my team. And she said, "This is so good for you. And you're very employable. So if it doesn't work out,"
yeah,
is
exactly.
that word? "You're very employable." And I just thought,
Fantastic. I love it. So tell us about the work you're doing then, Lindsay, and you know, where you're kind of pitching your coaching stuff.
Yeah, so I am on just primarily Instagram, Happily Soberly Living, and I really am focused on some virtual type coursework to support women who are looking for a little guidance every day. So I just launched that, and then one-on-one coaching right now. In the future, I'll be doing group coaching, and I have a lot of ideas for ways to support women. But right now it's just one-on-one coaching and some virtual products that I've.
And I'm guessing that you know, this could really appeal to women who, you know, are not dissimilar to you in that perhaps they've got high powered jobs, but feel like they maybe don't have an awful lot of time for themselves, right?
Yeah, I think for me, it's women who are on that cusp of burnout and they're stalling in their careers. And I mean, I have two or three women that I'm working with right now who that's where they're at. And it's what do we need to remove to make you successful again? And then they'll come up with it on their own, that it's the alcohol. And I'm just here to support them and cheer them on while they do
it. It is really interesting, that burnout piece. You know, I spoke to somebody the other day. It wasn't a client. It was just somebody I met at an event, and she'd literally had to take, I think it was something like 3 months off work. Of her job, she was in a managerial position, and she'd had to take something like 3 months off work, literally due to burnout. She'd literally kind of collapsed effectively. And I said to her, you know, do you looking back, did you see it coming? You know, and she said, well, you know, at the time I didn't think I did, but now I look back, I do realize that the signs were there. Because it's a bit like when people say they've started drinking again, they never trip up over the glass of wine in the street. You know, it doesn't throw itself down their neck, right? There's always a lead up. And exactly the same, she said, now I think back, I recognize there were lots and lots of signs, you know, lots of things that were happening, lots of thought processes, lots of warnings where my body was telling me something has to change. But I railroaded over it and didn't listen to any of it.
Yeah,
it's so interesting, isn't it? It's so important to listen to the warning signs. We have to be in tune with our own energy and our own state and that's really hard to do when you're drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you're just clouded. You're in this little, like you said earlier, hamster wheel. It's so important to know that there's more out there for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Lindsay, if you'd just like to give a 30-second plug to the Sober Coach training, I'd really appreciate it. Tell us what you enjoyed about the course.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So my favorite part about the course, I want to say, is a lot of your, just the one-on-one with you. It was so eye-opening to me. That session that we had together.
That's where I did my, some of the Matrix re-imprinting stuff, which is fantastic. Yeah. Yeah. That is amazing work.
It is. And tapping into some memories I think I didn't even realize I still had. And so that was so helpful for me. And I mean, that was also right around the time I was making my decision to leave my job. So it was super supportive at that moment. So the one-on-one with you. And then honestly, there's so much that helps people prepare to put themselves out there in their business. And I know that that's something that a lot of people struggle with. It's like, okay, well, now I have the certification. What do I do with it? And how do I get myself out there? And your ability to break things down to all the necessary components of what to do to be successful, like, I thought that was great.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thank you, Lindsay. I really appreciate it, and loads of luck and success. And I wish you all the best with everything you're doing, which I think will be fantastic. Just give us your website then, where people can find out more about the work you're doing.
Yes, it's lindsayhennecke.com.
Brilliant. Thank you. Lindsay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you, Lindsay. And obviously, if you are interested in training to be a sober coach, if you've ditched the booze and it's something you would like to think about, you know, you won't find a more rewarding work, because it brings you meaning and purpose. And, you know, it's just amazing to be able to make a change in people's lives. And so if that is something that interests you, just drop me a message. I'm very easy to find. You can email me, janie@janieleegrace.com, or you can find me on social media @janieleegrace. And just let me know and we'll have a chat and see if it's right for you. I definitely will not be doing a big sell on you, because I only want people that it feels absolutely 100% right for. So we can have a chat about that. The next course starts at the end of April. So drop me a message if that is of interest. So those of you who are new to sobriety, just back to you guys, if you're doing Dry January, someone in our sober club group last week was talking about how do you get to the acceptance stage, and how do you, you know, kind of start to like yourself, you know, because they've heard me talk about this so much. And the reality is you stick with the work, because this stuff, we tend to get very, very impatient, right? I know that I was really impatient and fully expected every change to come within 2 weeks. It doesn't work quite that way, which is why Dry January can be a bit of a difficult one. Of course, I love the fact that it kickstarts it for a lot of people and that it makes it easier socially. But if you're counting the days till you get to February so that you can drink again, pointless, literally pointless. You know, I've said a thousand times, you have to focus on everything you're gaining. Never use the word give up. Focus on what you're gaining, because there is so much to gain, and focus on the little wins as you go along. Now is not the time to be, you know, going back over the old transgressions, or the fact that perhaps you might be needing to say sorry to somebody at some point. Leave that for now, park it. Now is not the time. This is your time for recovery, for getting well, for focusing on all the good stuff, for putting the good nutrition in, for helping everything recalibrate. It's the time for you to really take care of yourself. You know, this should be the self-care month, really. So think about all of that before you start to get worried about, well, how do I accept? How do I forgive myself? Just let all that go for now. And you can come back to it later. And that's what we do in the Sober Club. We go through all these different sort of layers of just all the different pieces, because it's never only about not drinking. It's the everything else. It's the what's next. It's the literally living your best life without alcohol. That's what this is really about. And if I can just inspire one person to just give that a shot, then, you know, my work's done. So I'll see you, hopefully some of you, on Sunday in Manchester, depending on when you listen to this. And I'll see lots of you, hopefully, or I'll hear, get to hear, or you'll get to hear me, same time next week. Don't forget, if you want to join us in the Sober Club, it's very easy. You go to thesoberclub.com and click on join. You can leave us after a month if you don't like it, but, you know, there's a lot there. It's very high value. And of course, if you don't want to join us in the Sober Club, but if you'd like to support this work, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/JanieLeeGrace, I think that's how you do it, and pop a little donation into this work. That would be really much appreciated. And obviously, if we can have a real coffee, that would be even better. So I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.